Yes, folks, you can't keep a good man down, and whoever said that hadn't heard of a 12-gauge shotgun. Welcome to another episode of Historical Hysterical. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Historical Hystericals. It's been a while. We've been away. We've had things happen, and here we are.
Boy, have we had things happen.
Oh, we've had a third cast member join us.
Yes, it's little and furry.
Yes, and he's curling up to sleep on my lap. Thank you, Casper.
Yeah, okay. Yes, life has got in the way, and we've missed out on a few months of this, but we're back, and we promised to do some more.
We are. We're back with a vengeance, too, and we've had a special request for a historical hysterical episode on Tony Hancock,
the great British comedian who even had a lot of links with Australia.
Yes, he did, yeah. Before we get into him, though, some contact information.
Yes, our contact information is you can check out our website. That's www.commandermike356.podomatic.com. Or you can email us at commandermike356@yahoo.com.au.
Or if you like, you can just jump on Facebook and have a look for Historical Hystericals. Hit that little searchy button thingy, type in Historical Hystericals, and up we pop.
Now, the technical term is a searchy button thingy.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, it's like the little doohickey in the corner, you know.
I just realised this is an episode of firsts.
It is.
The first time we're in the same studio.
Kind of weird.
Yeah. Yes.
First time we've got our furry companion with us. Even weirder. And no, I'm not talking about Mike.
Yeah, and the dog as well. Right. Okay, so here we go. We're looking at Tony Hancock this week. It has been a while, hasn't it?
Hang on, we are doing more than one podcast a year, we hope.
Yes. Okay, let's see. Tony Hancock was born on the 12th of May in 1924.
Always a good start.
Yep. He was the second of three sons to Jack and Lily Hancock in Hall Green.
Now, when Tony was 2 years old, the family moved poo.
Moved poo? They moved poo. They had dogs too, did they?
Well, he was two, so they moved to Bournemouth, where they eventually bought the Railway Hotel.
Jack was a semi-professional entertainer at smoking concerts and Masonic functions.
Now, hang on, before we go any further, smoking concerts. I'm a bit edgy on what a smoking concert is.
Okay, in the old English vaudeville-type circuits, smoking concerts were basically gentlemen only, which means there were blue jokes, they were a bit bawdy, sometimes a bit of a stripper might show up, but shows put on which were not suitable for ladies.
Ah, you see, I asked Mike these questions because I know he was around then, so
I am going to hit you so hard.
Oh, God, we're in the same room, this could be dangerous.
And now it was during these shows that he'd attend and look at that young Tony met many of the music hall artists of the day. Now, after his father's death in 1934, Tony and his brothers lived with their mother and stepfather in a small hotel that was then called the Juriston Court. That's now renamed the Quality Hotel.
So, if you're ever in Bournemouth, go and look for the Quality Hotel, and bingo, you've found Tony Hancock's original home.
Yeah.
Hmm. Now, something you might not know about young Tony is that in school he was a great cricketer and a boxer. But he never really excelled academically, so he was a little bit of a dunce in the old classrooms. But although at technical college he learned to be very, very proficient with typing and shorthand, which is something every young man needs to know.
Especially today with computers. But exactly. Back then it was somewhat unusual.
Hmm.
So after leaving school, Tony briefly drifted in and out of a variety of jobs, but his heart was set on following his late father's footsteps by becoming a comedian.
Isn't that great? Wanted to be just like Daddy and work in blue theatre with strippers and dirty jokes. And
well, work in vaudeville, which was a different area again, but we'll get on to that.
Yeah.
His mother, Lily, introduced him to George Fairweather, a friend of the family who was in show business. And it was George who helped Tony find his feet. Now, Tony was a great admirer of the risque comedian of the day, Max Miller. Now, Maxie Miller, we got to do a show on him too. He was amazing. He would come out on stage and he was leading the way. Everyone considered him at the time filthy. But he'd walk out and he's got two joke books, a white one and a blue one. And he asked the audience, what do you want to hear, the blue jokes or the white jokes? And everyone said blue, so he'd throw the white joke book away and do his regular routine. It was...
Now, let me guess, the white joke book was actually empty. There was nothing in there.
Both of them were empty. They were props, but he never actually was asked to do a clean show.
Funny about that.
And listening to his recordings now is fascinating because they're not really, by today's standards, at all shocking or horrifying.
Oh, no, by today's standards, they'd be fairly, fairly tame, I would imagine.
Yes.
That's like an interesting little side note, is a lot of the pornographic movies of the 1970s have just recently been reclassified from XXX to R-rated here in Australia. So what was considered a porno back in the 70s is now just considered a fairly, you know, hardcore movie.
How times change.
Yes, I wonder what they consider a porno these days.
So Tony was a great admirer of Max Miller. So at the age of 17, calling himself the confidential comic, Tony tried to perform a Max Miller routine to an audience of soldiers and Sunday school teachers.
Ba-bow.
Yeah. The reception was somewhat frosty.
You reckon?
And the young, naive Tony himself, not understanding the jokes at all, didn't help. Now, George had advised Tony against doing the routine, and he came off stage humiliated and in tears. Tony confessed his rejection and failure to George and vowed never to tell a dirty joke again, which he never did.
Suggestive, yes. Dirty, no.
Not even all that suggestive. He took on a persona of the downtrodden... We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
That moves on.
We're only jumping ahead.
Yeah, we're only up to 1942 now.
Now, 1942 was when Tony volunteered with the RAF after being rejected by ENSA. ENSA.
ENSA, Entertainment's National Service Association. It's the British equivalent to the USO shows.
Oh, right.
So performing for the servicemen, basically.
Right. He was, however, accepted by Ralph Reeder, who was organising groups into gang shows. Now, he sent them off to many war zones to entertain the troops.
Now,
but 1942, end of World War II.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Gang show, isn't that the Scouts? The Scouts had gang shows happening for years, but they originated with these Ralph Reeder shows going through their servicemen back in 1942.
Uh-huh.
They were later picked up by the Scouts and became massively popular. I mean, we had gang shows here in Melbourne throughout the 70s, I remember.
Hundreds and hundreds of people on stage and everything else. These original gang shows consisted of about 10 members each, and they had to fend for themselves, travelling around in their own coaches, and, of course, this is during the war period, so, everything was a bit light on the ground. But it was during this time that Tony met Robert Morton, Graham Stark, and, of course, Peter Sellers.
So after the war, Tony, like many ex-servicemen, had a difficult time establishing himself in show business. His first real break was a six-week spell in 1948 as a comedian in the now infamous Windmill Theatre, where comedians were hired every 6 weeks to entertain the audience between the nude reviews.
Okay.
Don't know how interested they'd be in a comedian between strippers, but... Yeah.
Okay.
Eventually, his stage work came to the notice of the BBC, and he was given a spot on Variety Bandbox on the 9th of January, 1949. Now, from then on, his career began a steady improve, until in 1951, he was selected to take over from Robert Morton in Archie Andrews' tutor in the popular radio show Educating Archie. He played the tutor and foil to the nominal star, the ventriloquist dummy. Now, this is along the lines, if you remember Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, they were playing on the W.C. Fields radio show. This is the English equivalent. They had Archie Andrews was the ventriloquist dummy, and as we say, Tony got the job as the tutor, which always was the foil to the comics jokes.
I'm just trying to imagine a radio play using a ventriloquist dummy. I mean, does a ventriloquist still have to not move his lips, or...?
Well, the only concession to that is they had a live audience.
Oh, well, yeah, of course, yes. They'd probably spot the lip-moving thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
This brought him recognition and a catchphrase he used frequently in the shows, "Flippin' kids." This became popular among the people of the time. Now, the same year, he made regular guest appearances on BBC Television's popular light entertainment show, Kaleidoscope.
Now, at the same time as appearing in Educating Archie, Tony was involved with another comedy series, Happy Go Lucky, which, although ultimately doomed for failure, brought Tony into contact with Bill Kerr and also reunited him with Graham Stark. Now, Graham Stark, you might remember from earlier conversations, did the gang shows with him during World War II.
Now, towards the end of this ill-fated program, the new producer, Dennis Mayne Wilson, called the two young scriptwriters to help with the show. Their names were Ray Galton and Alan Simpson. Now, remember these names, they'll come important. So, Ray Galton and Alan Simpson met Tony Hancock for the first time.
Tony's success with Educating Artie, that was the American version of it, persuaded the BBC to give him a prominent part in a show called Forces All-Star Bill. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Right.
Now, when the scriptwriters had to be replaced, Tony gave his approval for the aforementioned Galton and Simpson to take over, and that began 10 years of increasing success for all three of them. After another three series, during which Graham Stark and Moira Lister became his regular team in Star Bill, the show became so popular that the BBC at last gave their approval for Tony's own show, Hancock's Half Hour, which was first broadcast on November 2nd, 1954.
And thus the legend was born.
Mm. Now, the show itself starred Tony as Anthony Aloysius St. John Hancock. Now, it's a more expansive version of Tony himself, living in a shabby little railway cuttings in East Chem. Most episodes portrayed his everyday life as a struggling comedian with aspirations towards straight acting. Some episodes, however, changed this to show him as being a successful actor and or comedian, or occasionally having a different career completely. Some episodes he was portrayed as a struggling barrister. Now, radio episodes were also prone to do more surreal stories, which would have him been practical on television, such as portraying Tony buying a puppy that grows to be as tall as himself.
The magic of radio, it's the theatre of the mind. You can do those sort of weird and wonderful things, and people just accept it, you know.
As the goons did over and over.
Oh, so often, yeah. I mean, like, the dog that's currently sitting on my lap is actually a cat, but you just don't know it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, Graham Stark was dropped from the team as his voice was thought to be too similar to Tony's. Instead, Tony suggested Sid James, an actor who'd played in his last film in 1954, Orders Are Orders. Moira Lister remained as the girlfriend, and Bill Kerr was added as a sidekick. They needed a versatile actor to play most of the other voices, and Dennis Mayne Wilson persuaded that a young actor he'd seen playing as the dolphin in Shaw's St. Joan. The actor's name was Kenneth Williams. He could switch effortlessly from comedy to pathos. Now, Kenneth Williams, if you're a Carry On fan, you know exactly who we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I can't do his voice, but yes. Tall, nasally, skinny guy. Normally played the straight man to the matron.
Yep.
In most of the Carry On films. But,
with questionable sexuality. But
no. Yes, yes.
So, after several successful series on the radio, Tony tried a TV show. Now, Tony was, however, contracted to do two series with ITV. The shows with scripts written by Eric Seitz were not acknowledged as being an outstanding success. Afterwards, Tony returned to the BBC and the successful writing team of Galton and Simpson. Now, for a period of 5 years, the radio and TV series ran concurrently, with the BBC increasing recognition until the ultimate and unprecedented accolade was achieved. Compliments began to pour into the BBC from publicans and shopkeepers who protested that when Tony was on, their pubs and shops were empty and the streets were deserted.
Now, the Hancock's Half Hour TV shows, are they available on DVD? Or?
I don't think I've seen them on DVD, but there are some episodes are available on YouTube, most notably The Blood Donor and The Dentist.
Check them out. Have a look. Tony, do a YouTube search, Tony Hancock. And I'm sure they're going to come up.
Oh, yeah.
Great stuff to watch. And it is dated, but it's still funny.
This is what I like about comedy. It can be dated, but it's a piece of history. And you look at it in context, it's fascinating.
Well, who's on first?
Exactly.
Exactly. And that's been retold in so many various different ways. And they actually did recently a Who's on First version, which was Abbott and Costello calling from a computer help desk.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, yeah. What do you need on your computer? Windows. I don't need a window. I've got a window over here. No, no, do you want me to come and install the window? I don't need to install the window. It's right here. So,
very silly.
It could go on.
So let's see. Tony, with Galton and Simpson, produced many classic shows that are now part of our comic heritage. On radio, there was Tony Hancock's Test Pilot, The Scandal Magazine, Fred's Pie Stall, Sunday Afternoon at Home, The Poetry Society, and Sid's Mystery Tours.
While on TV, we had The Economic Drive, The Two Murderers, The Missing Page, The Bedsitter, The Reunion Party, The Blood Donor, and many, many, many more.
Do a computer search. I'm sure you'll be able to find audio of the radio shows, and I'll put up some links to some of the YouTube stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, check the website. We'll do that via the Facebook page, I think.
Yep, via Facebook.
Check it out.
So, as an actor with considerable experience in films, Sid James became more important to the show when the television version began.
Now, I've got to wonder about that. Sid James is not exactly the most attractive bloke.
No, but he's very talented in presenting comedy or pathos. He's a great actor.
Great actor. Fantastic timing, but just the face. Just, you know, you've heard of a face that launches a thousand ships? Well, they were getting away from Sid.
The regular cast was reduced to just Hancock and James, allowing the humour to come from the interaction between the two men. James was the realest of the two, with the down-to-earth approach that would puncture Hancock's pretensions. His character would often be dishonest and exploit Tony's apparent gullibility during the radio series, but when the television version began, a more genuine friendship began between the two men.
Although increasingly successful, Tony never rested on his laurels and was always looking to improve his performances, the scripts, the camera angles, the show's cast, every aspect of the show. To his end, he gradually dispersed with all his long-time colleagues, including Sid James.
So this is an example of someone taking full control of everything, the directing, the lighting, and Tony did that. See, Tony was becoming anxious that his work with James was turning them into a double act. And the last BBC series in 1961, retitled simply Hancock, was without Sid James. Two episodes amongst his best remembered, The Blood Donor, in which he goes to a clinic to give blood, contains famous lines such as, "A pint? That's nearly an armful." Where the doctor says, "You don't have an empty arm or an empty anything." I love it. Another well-known installment is The Radio Ham, in which Tony plays the amateur radio enthusiast who receives a mayday call from a yachtsman in distress.
It is not raining here.
Yeah. But his incompetence prevents him from taking its position. Now, both of these programs were later re-recorded for a commercial 1961 LP in the style of radio episodes. And these versions have been continuously available ever since. I must have a hunt for the audio version of these. They're great.
Now, unfortunately, Tony hungered for international film stardom, and in 1960, Galton and Simpson wrote The Rebel, his second film. Although well-received in the UK and in the Commonwealth, the film had no impact in the US market, which was, of course, Tony's original goal, because everybody wants to become famous in America.
That's where the money is.
Yeah, ka-ching!
After his last BBC series, Tony insisted that the next film script had to have a much wider appeal, i.e. the US. And for 6 months, Galton and Simpson laboured unpaid to write one. In fact, they wrote several, but all were rejected by Tony. Eventually, it was agreed that Galton and Simpson would write some comedy scripts for the BBC while Tony decided what to do next. This may have been Tony's biggest mistake, as one of the scripts Galton and Simpson wrote was called Steptoe and Son.
Never heard of it.
And the rest is history. Needless to say, the two were kept very busy thereafter, and Tony never found anybody who adequately replaced them. Instead, he decided to form his own company, in which Philip Oakes co-wrote the screenplay for A Punch and Judy Man, which was largely unsuccessful in the UK and ill-suited to worldwide audiences.
It's kind of funny the way it goes. You'll get the American sense of humour, which people in the UK will get, and people in Australia get. But then the UK humour translates into Australia, but it doesn't necessarily translate into America all the time. It just, it gets lost in the translation somewhere.
Yeah.
What philosophical mumbling for the day.
After his film in 1963, Tony went to ATV for a series of 13 comedy shows that were reasonably well received. Although the scripts were mediocre, and by mischance, the shows were broadcast at the same time as Steptoe and Son.
Oh, big mistake.
And that was then at the height of its success. That's 1963. Tony returned to the stage, Korea, and made several tours of the UK with some of his former BBC colleagues. Like many comedians, Tony worried about his performance and continuing success. He liked to drink, but as his career began to falter, his drinking dramatically increased and he became a chronic alcoholic. In the 1960s, alcoholism wasn't widely understood, and engagements meant for any comedian admitting to such a problem would quickly dry up. He laboured on through two more ITV series, The Blackpool Show and Hancock's. And by the last series, Tony was in poor shape and the show received bad reviews. In desperation, Tony accepted a three-week engagement in Melbourne, Australia, where he went down well enough to be invited back in 1968 to make a series of six TV shows.
Yay! Go Aussie!
Now, I know they're available on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
And fascinating because, we'll go on to that.
Now, unfortunately, by then, his alcoholism had reached an advanced stage, and although he struggled to work hard, his personal problems, the scripts, and his fellow actors left a lot to be desired. Indeed, his private life was in one heck of a mess. He'd left his first wife...
Cicely,
thank you. And he married his agent, Freddie Ross.
Freddie, it was a girl's name, trust me.
Oh, okay, right. Yes. I'll take it. I was going to say...
Let's not imply anything else that isn't there.
But his alcoholism and depressive, violent moods eventually drove her away as well. While Tony was in Australia, the divorce to his second wife became absolute. And alone, depressed, and sinking into public oblivion, sadly, he committed suicide on June the 25th, 1968.
Would it be unfair to say if you're going to commit suicide, Sydney's the place that would make you do it?
Yeah, I'd say it probably would be, yeah. Never been to Hobart, have you?
So since his tragic death, Tony Hancock's fame has not diminished, but has continued to shine ever brighter through his repeats of his radio shows, his TV shows, records, CDs, cassettes, and even through many books and scripts. His comic genius has grown in stature, being appreciated and enjoyed by a new generation of admirers the world over. Spike Milligan said, "He went around closing doors on everybody and eventually closed the door on himself."
That sounds like a Spike thing to say, doesn't it?
And in tribute, Harry Secombe said, "The demands of his profession shaped him, destroyed him, and eventually killed him. If anyone paid dearly for his laughs, this was the lad himself. May he lie sweetly at rest."
Oh, so Harry, that was so nice.
So it was an amazing character he had on stage, the loser that had grand plans but not the talent, or the successful person who had no clue. Look up YouTube. It's really fascinating to see him at work.
It's kind of interesting to think that if he had not shot for the US and if he'd said, okay, I'm going to stay here in the UK, concentrate on my homegrown success, he possibly could have expanded his career even further and just kept on going.
But life's like that. You make decisions and it takes you somewhere. Like, he was incredibly popular, as we said. Yeah. All the pubs and streets were deserted when his radio shows were on. He had great success. He wanted more.
It's a bit like when the grand final's on in Melbourne. You know, you just
yeah, nothing around anywhere.
Nothing anywhere, no.
So that was Tony Hancock.
Interesting guy.
It is, and as I say, I'll post on the Facebook pages the links to YouTube videos, and if I can find audio somewhere, I'll post links to them as well.
It's kind of a testament to the talent of the guy. He didn't have the longest career of some of the comedians that are around. I mean, these guys that have been going for 60 years and they're still going strong, but short as the career was, on relative terms, he's still hugely popular. Yeah. And it's, as I say, it's something that is dated when you watch it, But it's still funny.
Yeah.
It's still funny to watch.
You consider, he died in 1968, and we're still talking about him in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, we should be so lucky.
Yeah. Oh, dear. I just flashed onto a Kylie Minogue image then. And Kylie Minogue and Tony
Hancock.
I am
not putting the skirt on again.
Tony Hancock and Kylie Minogue together. I think we'll just move away. Don't make eye contact.
Oh, dear. If you've got someone you'd like us to cover in an Historical Hystericals podcast, send us an email and let us know who you'd like us to look at.
You can email us at commandermike356@yahoo.com.au, or you can leave a message on our Facebook page.
Yep, just pop on the searchy button thingy, type in Historical Hystericals, and whoop, there we are. And, of course, all of our podcasts are available through iTunes. So if you've missed a podcast at all, you can do a quick searchy thingy button on iTunes and you'll find all the Historical Hystericals podcasts.
So drop us a line. Let us know what you think of the show. Tell your friends.
Knock, knock.
Yeah. Knock, knock.
That was a line.
Okay. Mm. Tell your friends. Let us know. And if you like the show, review us on Facebook.
And if you're a frequent traveller on Qantas Airways and you're listening to the Comedy Channel, you'll find a lot of the comedians that we review on Historical Hystericals are being played on the Comedy Channel on Qantas Air. So check it out and listen to the Historical Hystericals podcast. It gives you a great insight into the background of those people.
Excellent. I have no idea who we're going to do next time, but it's going to be a lot sooner than the last time.
What about the goodies? Yeah, that could be interesting. All three.
Because I know two of them are still very, very active in entertainment.
They are, yes.
And one of them has gone off to look at birds.
We could look at, I'm sorry, I'll read that again, and things like that.
There's so many things. Yeah, I mean, they've been going for years. I like that idea.
Yeah.
We'll start looking into that. Goodies, if you like the idea of the goodies, let us know. If there's anyone else you'd like like us to review and have a look at, let us know.
Thanks for listening, guys.
We've got to go. Have fun.
All three of us.
Have fun. Bye.
Bye.